Coming up, open heart surgery in India at a cost even the poor can pay.
If the solution is not affordable, it is not a solution.
Also, young Jews learning to farm.
Jewish tradition comes alive when you engage with the physical world.
I never imagined myself milking goats, but I love it.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. At the Vatican this week, Pope Francis urged prayers for migrants fleeing poverty and violence who have recently died while attempting to enter Europe. He said their deaths were crimes which offend the entire human family. This week, at least 12 Syrian migrants drowned off the coast of Turkey, among them a three-year-old boy. In Hungary, thousands of migrants crowded a train station demanding passage to Germany. The crisis has set off a heated debate among EU officials about whether the Muslim immigrants are threatening, quote, Europe's Christian roots. The humanitarian group Catholic Relief Services said it would increase aid to Syrian refugees. In Alaska, President Obama continued drawing attention to climate change during his three-day tour of the state. He visited a melting glacier and spoke with Alaskan natives about the impact of climate change on fishing and other industries. He called on world leaders to produce a deal to curb global warming at the UN summit in Paris later this year. Meanwhile, on September 1st, Pope Francis marked the Catholic Church's first World Day of Prayer for the Care of Creation. Massive preparations are underway for the Pope's visit to the U.S. in just over 2 weeks. On the 22nd, a Tuesday, he arrives in Washington from Cuba. The 23rd, he talks with President Obama. The 24th, he addresses Congress and then flies to New York. The 25th, he speaks to the U.N., participates in an interfaith service at Ground Zero, visits Central Park, and says Mass at Madison Square Garden. On the 26th and 27th, he's in Philadelphia for what's called the World Meeting of Families. He celebrates Mass there for an expected 1.5 million people and then heads back to Rome. Francis made headlines this week when he announced that women who have had abortions can be forgiven by priests. He said priests would be able to, quote, absolve the sin of abortion during the Catholic Church's upcoming Jubilee of Mercy year. That begins December 8th. Nearly 60% of U.S. Catholics believe abortion is a sin, compared with 48% of the general U.S. population. That's according to a new survey by the Pew Research Center. However, the Pew survey on American Catholicism shows that a majority of U.S. Catholics disagree with church teachings on several other issues. 7 in 10 say the church should allow birth control, and nearly 6 in 10 say women should be allowed to become priests. 3 in 4 who were raised Catholic but are not anymore say they can't see themselves returning to the church. The survey also found that 45% of all Americans say they're either Catholic or are connected to Catholicism in some way. In Kentucky, County Clerk Kim Davis was sent to jail for contempt after refusing to comply with a court order to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples. Davis has maintained that issuing the licenses would violate her Christian beliefs, and she had said she's prepared to go to jail for her faith. Earlier in the week, she faced off with same-sex couples seeking to get married.
You're supposed to issue marriage licenses.
And we're not issuing marriage licenses today.
The Supreme Court denied your stay.
We are not issuing marriage licenses today.
So based on what?
I would ask you all to
why are you not issuing marriage licenses today?
Because I'm not.
Under whose authority?
Are
you not issuing licenses?
Under God's authority.
In Washington, leaders of several black church denominations, including the African Methodist Episcopal Church, joined in a worship service to address the issue of racism in the United States. The leaders also held a press conference on the theme of liberty and justice for all, urging U.S. lawmakers to take greater action on criminal justice reform, gun laws, and voting rights.
We are here in Washington today to serve notice that we as people of faith will not return to a complicit complacency of calm composure. We are grateful.
We have a Fred DeSam Lazaro story today about a heart surgeon in India who runs a network of hospitals that perform world-class operations at a small fraction of what they would cost in the U.S. He is Dr. Devi Prasad Shetty of Bangalore. His is a tough-minded, for-profit approach. Still, he believes even the most sophisticated surgery should be available to the world's poorest people.
Hole in the heart is one of those standard procedures.
It's probably more standard for Devi Prasad Shetty than just about anyone else. The 62-year-old surgeon says he stopped counting after his 15,000th open-heart operation.
I do now about one or two surgeries a day, and we work 6 days a week. My colleagues, some of them do four surgeries, five surgeries a day.
Anywhere from 25 to 35 open-heart operations are performed in the theaters here every day, many on babies, making this by far the largest cardiac care facility in the world. This 1,000-bed hospital in Bangalore is part of a fast-growing for-profit hospital chain called Narayana Health. Its error rate is similar to or lower than most American hospitals at a tiny fraction of the cost. Take this complicated valve replacement operation that took more than 6 hours.
This patient would have paid us about $2,500 to $3,000. But in the U.S., an operation of this nature would cost, I guess, more anything from $70,000, $100,000.
Dr. Shetty founded Narayana Health 15 years ago. Like similar enterprises in India, it does serve wealthy patients and some medical tourists, but he says the mission is to bring the latest advances in cardiac surgery to the lower middle class and the poor.
If a solution is not affordable, it is not a solution. It's pointless we talking about huge developments in cardiac surgery or a brain operation or a complex cancer surgery if a common man cannot afford it.
Chocolate curry?
Here's a candy for you.
I see 70, 100 patients a day. A typical patient of mine is a little kid on a mother's lap.
He has a leakage in the valve of his heart. He needs an operation.
The surgery carries risks, Shetty told the child's family.
Sir, he is my only child. That's all I want to say.
I will do everything possible. God will make it all right. Don't worry.
It's a scene repeated several times a day, Shetty says, and the tears, the anguish, are not always about whether the surgery will be successful.
I tell the mother that the baby requires a heart operation. And she has only one question, how much it is going to cost. And I tell her that it is going to cost 80,000 rupees, which she doesn't have. And that is a price tag on the kid's life. She comes up with 80,000 rupees, she can have the baby. If she doesn't have 80,000 rupees, she's going to lose the kid.
That's about $1,300, a lot of money in India where hundreds of millions earn less than $2 a day. A few patients are helped by a charitable trust set up by Narayana Health. Most have somehow scrounged together the resources. In India, Shetty says, 80% of all medical bills are paid out of pocket.
They virtually sell everything what they have and come for treatment. Half the country's population borrow money or sell assets to pay the medical bills.
The parents of 5-month-old Manoj borrowed about 3 times their monthly income as rural farm laborers just to figure out why the child wasn't thriving.
He was not taking his milk properly. He had fevers and cough, so we took him to see the doctor. They told us he needed surgery.
That meant a day-long train journey to this hospital, but once there, another Narayana benefit kicked in. An insurance policy developed with farmer associations and state governments in South India. The plan covers only major medical costs like surgery, but the premium of just 10 cents a month makes it widely affordable.
It's amazing that such a small amount of money could provide that care. The number of people who are covered under this scheme is about 10 million now, and it has performed close to about 100,000 operations of various kinds.
We were assured 3-year-old Chitra Shri was in no physical pain, just anxious as nurses removed her stitches from a successful heart operation. A huge relief medically and financially for her parents, who struggled to get by selling milk from their 2 cows. The insurance coverage for their extended family and so many others has been a significant revenue source for Narayana Health.
About 25%.
Really?
Yes.
So it's significant.
It is significant.
It's just one business strategy Narayana has used to find revenue. It also has a Walmart-like approach to cost saving, squeezing vendors for everything from surgical gowns to supplies to devices.
We have 32 hospitals across India. 12% of the heart surgery done in India is done by us. When we implant one of the largest number of heart valves in the world, obviously you pay for it less than others. And also, more than the cost, your results get better.
He says the sheer volume of surgery not only improves productivity and lowers cost, it also makes the surgeons better at their art. They are paid well by Indian standards, but probably far less than they could earn elsewhere, especially in the West.
We can address the need of the doctors, but we cannot address the greed of the doctors. And I am pleased to say that our attrition rate among the doctors is virtually 0%. They love working here.
What qualities are you looking for specifically to work in a place like this?
The most important quality is the passion. The second most important quality is the compassion.
Shetty grew up in a middle-class Hindu family and developed an early passion for medicine, watching doctors treat his parents, who both suffered ill health. After medical school, he trained in London and returned to work in India, at first in Calcutta. There, by chance, he got to treat the city's most famous citizen, Mother Teresa.
I was truly, truly touched by her thoughts and deeds. Like a simple statement from her, which says that hands which serve are more sacred than the lips that pray.
Shetty says he serves with his hands, and he prays.
I'm very, very spiritual, but I'm not religious. I believe in the existence of God. And before I start an operation, I pray to God. And after the surgery, I again pray to him for taking me through the operation.
Prayer, Mother Teresa, Walmart? Shetty sees no contradiction. In order to be charitable at any scale, he says, you can't be a charity.
Charity is not scalable. It doesn't matter who you are. You may be the richest person living on this planet. But if you want to offer free surgery, free treatment to everyone, you will go broke within a month. But good business principles, standard business policies are scalable.
Narayana Health has branched out beyond cardiac surgery into cancer and kidney care, and Shetty says it will become the world's largest hospital system in a few years.
It was very difficult at first when we came to see him, but the doctors told us that things are going to be all right.
Baby Manoj is but one case, Shetty says, that proves healthcare, even sophisticated surgery, can be made accessible to the poorest people in the farthest corner of the world. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is Fred DeSam Lazaro in Bengaluru, India.
Now, Jews in America have not usually been thought of as farmers, but Kim Lawton found a group of young Jewish environmentalists on three-month fellowships in Falls Village, Connecticut, learning to cultivate, quote, the soil and the soul. Growing vegetables and milking goats, they said, revealed a fundamental connection between sustainable farming and their personal spirituality.
It's 6 a.m. in scenic Falls Village, Connecticut, and mist is still rising off the lake. For these Jewish farmers at the Isabella Friedman Retreat Center, it's time for the morning prayer service, Avudat Lev, the service of the heart. This morning, there's a special guest, Nigel Savage, founder and president of the Jewish environmental group, Hazon.
Jewish tradition comes alive when you engage with the physical world.
The word Hazon means vision, and Savage's vision is to apply the values of his faith to caring for the earth through direct experience and through activism.
Part of the challenge today is coping with all of the things that are wrong in the world, and also how amazing the world is, and how do we put those pieces together. Fundamentally, we're trying to create a healthier and a more sustainable world for everybody, and a healthier and a more sustainable Jewish community.
Hazon sponsors several environmental awareness campaigns and educational activities, including Adama, a three-month organic farming fellowship here in Connecticut for 20-somethings. Adama means earth in Hebrew. It's a word used in the Genesis creation story. Adam was made from Adama. Shamu Sadeh directs the program. He says they cultivate both the soil and the soul here. Initially, many people didn't take Adama seriously.
It was a novelty, and people thought it was funny, and they'd make all the jokes. A Jewish person in the woods, a Jewish farmer, ha ha.
But Sadeh says now more and more Jews are becoming concerned about food and sustainability. Adama runs a community-supported agriculture project which delivers organic crops to local families and food banks. They also sell vegetables at markets, as well as their jams, goat's milk cheese, and their popular pickles.
What makes your pickles more special than the ones I buy at the supermarket?
I think our pickles are really very high quality. A lot of people really like our pickles because of what they support.
Many of the fellows were drawn by the idea of learning more about nature and farming. Molly Zimmerman came as a fellow and stayed. She's now a field apprentice.
It's honest work. We don't spray pesticides. We plant beneficial flowers so that beneficial insects can come and eat the pests that are eating our tomatoes. It does feel like a moral thing for me and just a more honest way of farming.
I never imagined myself milking goats, but I love it. It's my favorite thing here.
Many of these millennials were also drawn by the idea of having an intentionally Jewish experience.
I wouldn't necessarily consider myself super religious, but more culturally Jewish. And I've been looking for a way to reconnect with that part of myself and Jewish community. And this is where it's at. I definitely found it here.
Organizers say before coming here, many participants have been disengaged from Jewish institutions. But being here, spending time in nature, helps reconnect them to their faith.
The spiritual experiences that I share with people happen just as much in the field when I'm working or when I'm milking goats as they do in a service. There's just a lot of room for joy and gratitude and excitement. You're holding a seed in your hand that you know and however many months will grow into an onion, and it's just like a miracle. It's unbelievable.
Sadeh says at Adama, they try to tie that nature-based spirituality directly to Jewish tradition.
It's one of the primary Jewish teachings that I relate to and also teach is a sense of wonder or a sense of awe. Everything that follows, all the laws and all the ritual and all the language, it's just a response to that basic human experience of, wow.
Judaism is very deeply rooted in agriculture, and I didn't know that before. And being able to learn that and learn things from the Torah that are like related to the things that I do day to day is just like mind-blowing to me.
We entered human history as an indigenous people, and that's what the Torah is a record of. Life, language, life cycle, climate, food.
As an example, Savage cites the concept of being kosher, asking, is this fit or right to eat?
For 2,000 years, Jewish people have been asking that question in the frame of, well, is it from a pig or a cow, and how is this animal killed? In the 21st century, that question, is this fit for me to eat? That's an important question for everybody alive today, because the ramifications of our food choices play out on other people's lives and on animals and on land and on the climate.
Sadass says from the very beginning in the Garden of Eden, humans have felt the tension of living on Earth when God told Adam and Eve to both work the garden and tend it.
We need to change the world around us to make food and warm our homes in the winter and move ourselves around on the one hand. On the other hand, that there needs to be a fundamental, you know, underlying note of protecting it.
Hazon and Adama urge individuals to examine how their actions can play a role in making the planet more sustainable for the future.
Words like sustainability out in the world have become very abstract. Sometimes I think people use it just to mean, like, less bad, you know? But actually what sustainable means is it's a cycle that could keep going forever, and here that's not an abstract idea. It's a very, very direct thing.
And I recognize that it's only one person doing one small part, but if you add all those people together, and then all of us telling our communities about the little things that we can all do to be more sustainable, I mean, that has to make a difference in the world.
But Savage says there's an advocacy component as well. In July, he and other faith leaders were invited to a climate change meeting in Paris, organized by the president of France. There, people of faith were urged to speak out about climate change in advance of a major United Nations meeting on the issue later this fall. Savage praised Pope Francis for calling climate change a moral issue in his recent encyclical.
He was really challenging all of us to slow down a little bit and to think about the consequences of our actions and to figure out how we can be our best selves in a world that truly needs everybody to be our best selves in order not to, you know, not to really make a mess of things.
Savage believes Pope Francis has helped re-energize Jewish environmentalism. He says climate change will be a key topic in many synagogues during the high holidays, which fall around the Pope's visit to the U.S.
On the day of Yom Kippur, the Pope is going to be at the White House. The next morning, he's going to be speaking to both houses of Congress. And the day after that, he's going to be in New York to address the United Nations. And so, and in Jewish language, he's going to be speaking about tshuva, which means not merely repentance, but returning to our best selves.
And with all the warnings about the potentially catastrophic implications of climate change, Savage believes Jews have another contribution to make as well.
I do think that one of the deep lessons of Jewish history is this ability to face tragedy, to face destruction, and actually not be bowed by it.
It's a contribution he believes can help the environmental movement address the looming issues with hope. I'm Kim Lawton in Falls Village, Connecticut.
A movie about faith called The War Room is making a splash at the box office. The film focuses on an African-American couple and their attempt to overcome marriage troubles with prayer. It was produced on a low budget by Hollywood standards, but it has become a sleeper hit thanks to a grassroots campaign aimed at high-profile pastors and churches. It made $11.4 million in its opening week, four times the production costs. On our calendar this week, Hindus around the world celebrate Janmashtami. The festival honors the birth of their popular deity, Lord Krishna, who is believed to be one of the incarnations of the god Vishnu. Finally, without seeming too immodest, those of us working on this program have a couple of things to celebrate. First, this week begins our 19th year on the air, and we thank everyone who made that possible. Second, when the Religion Newswriters Association announced its awards last weekend, in our category, Television News Magazine Religion Reporting, we won every prize. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There's also much more on our website where you can listen to or watch every program. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, music from the John Wesley AME Zion Church in Washington, D.C. The hymn is My Hope Is Built.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.